and welcome to what I think is season two, series two of Relatively Football, a special Olympic edition of Relatively Football. We kind of came to a bit of a quiet end last season, Theo, didn't we? We kind of, I think, both just got a bit overwhelmed and exhausted.
Yeah, there's been a lot of football, and that's both a blessing and a curse. And Flo, you know, you've been doing so much tremendous work out there, and I couldn't dream of bothering you. And likewise, you know, my life sometimes gets busy as well. So hello, welcome back. It's so good to have you, listener, wherever you may be. Pull up a chair, jump in your hammock, take your shoes off, put your shoes on if you want, go for a walk, and headphones on.
Yeah, it's funny because we wanted to do one when they announced the Team GB squad. I know we wanted to do an episode then, and then it kind of almost took too long and we were already like knee deep in other things, and now we're doing a bit of a preview. We can actually talk about the Team GB squad in that anyway, so it works quite well. And we have a special guest as well, because
family's getting bigger.
The family's getting bigger again. Someone is returning to the Relatively Football multiverse, universe.
I was going
to
say, the RFU.
RFU. Because obviously it's a global tournament, so we need that global knowledge that Theo and I do not possess. And
I'm a little Englander myself.
So we're joined by Sophie Lawson. So thanks so much for joining us once again for this wild ride of women's football.
Happy to be here. And I know that you two maybe aren't so hot on some teams, but you are very busy, whereas I have nothing but time on my hands. So I think this will work out pretty well.
I mean, look, we can't all be international football experts, Sophie. So, you know, own it.
Okay, if I could get that as a paying job, oh boy.
There you have it, listener. Also, if you can offer Sophie a paying job, could happen.
And so close to actually going out to Tokyo as well, which is, I think, much closer than really anyone I know has got. Briefly, can you fill us in on how close you were and why you decided not to go? I mean, it's kind of obvious reasons, I suppose, with the global situation. But did you nearly put that all to aside and thought, screw the 2 weeks quarantine or whatever, I'm still going to do it?
I was in a very long time of thinking, I should do it. I mean, you know, how often are you going to get the chance? But sort of throughout the last, I don't know, since before Easter, I think I was trying to monitor what the situation was in Japan, what the situation was specifically in Tokyo, and just how unfortunately overwhelmed they still are with everything. And I was thinking, like, I travel all around Europe for women's football, and I do very stupid things when I travel for football that probably puts myself in danger. If I was to have any kind of anything happen, I would not want that to be in Tokyo with a health service that is really struggling with COVID, with just sort of nurses and doctors who are burning out because of it. I don't want to be another variable in that. And I had that going on in my brain. I also had, but it's the Olympics. And it was a whole faff trying to get accredited for it. And then, you know, I actually got my accreditation card through the other day. And the photo on it is the one I took standing in the bath because they didn't like my passport photo. The resolution was like 3 pixels too few or whatever. So everything about it was a chore. And I really was like, I'm not going to go. And ultimately, it was kind of a moral decision. And there's only so much access you can get anyway, the situation is. So then you're thinking, is it worth all this hassle? And is it worth, you know, potentially, you know, even if I pick up COVID, even if I'm fine, if I'm spreading it, if I'm doing this, that, the other, I don't want to be one of those people. So that was ultimately kind of just, you know, trying to be morally upstanding, and which isn't against anything on those who did go, because, you know, I think Susie Rack's out there for The Guardian, but The Guardian have a bigger team. They have more people who know what they're doing, this type of thing. Yeah. So everyone, I just say it a little bit extra, that everyone who's going out there as press, each organization needs a COVID liaison officer who handles everything, which if you're part of a big organization, is fine. but freelancers all have to be their own CLOs. And the whole system to get onto was like, it was a massive headache. I think a lot of us were going, you can keep getting at us. And it was just kind of the eventual, we're not going to do this, which is a shame. But grand scheme of things, I get to sit in my bedroom with a fan throughout the tournament. And
you're still going to be covering it from home anyway.
Yeah. I have issues with my TV because of the work going on in the house. So that might be another little challenge. And my laptop might actually explode. But it should be cooler as well in England, marginally, than in Japan.
Theo, you, before we get onto the Olympic stuff, you wanted to do a little bit of a general WOFO update.
WOFO. And still also, trying to bring WOFO back.
Obviously, we're going to be looking out for all Sophie's coverage during the Olympics, because even with a half exploding laptop and a half functioning TV, she's going to be giving us all the content we need. So we're going to be looking out for that. But before we get onto the major Olympic stuff, Theo, your WOFO WOSO update.
Yeah, there's been lots of news. I was going to open the floor to if anyone wants to talk about their summer on or off from WOSO WOFO. Any news, any big updates that you want to throw out there? I was going to play a little game with the two of you, if you're interested, to get your opinions on some news, so we can kind of update the listeners and we can get some opinions at the same time. Kind of two birds, one stone.
Let's do it.
All right, so the game is called Stony or Stoner.
Okay.
So just reply if you think a decision is a Casey Stoney decision, aka very smart, very intelligent, shrewd, serious, or if you think it's a Stoner decision, so a little bit gauche, wild.
What are you
maybe
thinking?
Yeah, what were you doing? Maybe okay. You were under some sort of abuse, substance abuse, or just substance, not abuse. Hey, stoners are cool. I'm all about stoners. But maybe in the football world, we're looking for the stony amongst us. Anyway, first off the bat, Dan Carter, Reading to Brighton, undisclosed fee. How are we feeling?
I can't call it one or the other, because there's something that I call the Daniel Carter, Benjamin Button syndrome, where she's actually not as old as you think. And I think
someone
it
sounds like a stoner.
I think, I don't know, because it's still, you know, I wanted to see more of her at Reading last season. I wouldn't say I was massively disappointed, because she's coming off two back-to-back horrible injuries. So it's going to be a slow burner to get back up to kind of a good level. So I think it's not a ridiculously crazy move, but I wouldn't say it's a super stony, shrewd move. And I think she is perceived by a lot of coaches, because she's been in the game so long, and perhaps because of her injuries as well, as a lot more of a veteran than she actually is, when in reality on paper she should have quite a few more good years in her, but because of her injuries and the fact that she was at Arsenal so long and had a really good solid kind of middle bit of that time there, I think people kind of imagine that she's like 32 when she's actually only 27 last time I checked, unless she recently turned 28. So me and her are the same age, which is totally baffling to me, because I think you just automatically perceive her as being much older. But I wouldn't say it's total madness. I don't know what you think, Soph.
I think she's 28.
Oh, she just turned 28. Damn. She was 27.
I mean, 2 months ago today.
Right.
It's been a long so it's been a long year.
I didn't think I was going to stump the two of you on this. Is the first one.
First
we've got
question.
Like six more of these to
it's
go.
Not crazy, but it's not like the best deal in the world.
I was going to say, like, sort of the whole premise of this game feels a lot like trying to curry favor with San Diego right off the bat. And like, I would say that Stoney's track record, although it's a very short one as head coach, as manager, she hasn't always made the right signings. I think there's a degree of gamble in some that she has done, maybe. And I would say that this is right in that ballpark. I think Dan Carter's got to find the right team for her. And even though she is 28, you know, if she gets a run in the Brighton side, if she offers them something different, if it's, again, sort of the, a mark for sort of the next chapter for Hope Powell's Brighton, then it could be a Casey Stoney. And if it doesn't work out, could also be a Casey Stoney. But it's not Stoney, I don't think.
I appreciate the... You feel definitely both of you feel free to reinterpret the Stoney or the Stoner. Stoner can be positive. Stoner can be positive too. Oh, it's my quiz. I don't have to answer.
As the Brighton fan.
In the Brighton shirt.
Not an official Brighton. I mean, it's a Koi Visto shirt. Other teams are available. All right, next one. Mate, your mate, Carla Ward, signing Alicia Lehmann to Aston Villa. Stoney or Stoner will start with Soph.
Pure Casey Stoney.
Pure. The purest form. Flo?
You know, most people know I love Alicia Lehmann, top hun, top gal.
Follow at Huns FC.
And this Carla Ward, Alicia Lehmann link up is kind of like all my dreams coming true. But Lehmann is a like good time player in a sense that she has to be in the right headspace and be in the right mood to get... much needed consistency out of her, because oh boy can she be inconsistent. And I think she looks happy, and it's all about her getting settled and getting her in the right frame of mind to play well. And if Carla Ward can do that, it's a absolute Stoney, but it's not gonna come easy. I think, you know, it does take a lot to get the best out of Alicia Lehmann.
Last one here. On a week off from racing Louisville, Yuki Nakasato grabbing a pint at the Renaissance Fair. For the English listeners, Renaissance Fairs are basically where Americans obsess over medieval times. I don't know why and when they got into it, but apparently it's a thing in the United States.
It's because they don't have any history of their own.
Zing!
They got no history. Zinger! So yeah, Yuki Nakasato grabbing a pint on a weekend off, dressing up as a... as a witch, or not a witch, I don't know.
Wench.
Something.
A wench?
Wench.
Yeah.
Stoner, because it's stoner vibes.
Yeah, like most of Yuki's social
her
media.
Content is...
It's pure stoner.
Pure, the purest form. All right, and this is the last one. Great. I promise. Relatively football coming back for a second season. Stoney or stoner?
Stoner.
And there's the sibling sync up, and that has been Stoney or Stoner. Maybe we'll bring it back. There's been lots of great news. Jump in if you want to throw anything out there. I guess I'll just say Liga MX Femenil came back this weekend. Go and follow Eugene Rapinski and Amelia Lopez of FMS State of Mind and FootMex Nation, respectively, two of the best writers in the game covering the brilliant Liga MX Femenil. And always good to have more international football to be found wherever it is. So yeah, that's all I got. And we can get on to the Olympic preview if you like now, or speak up.
Let's get cracking. Group E in the totally logical format of EFG.
Well, I mean, it's because the men's teams take A, B,
yeah,
C, D.
Yeah. So logical.
Club to be the second four.
The logical Sesame Street option, as the men have A, B, C, D, the women's tournament just carries on and is EFG. So we're going to start with Group E, which is Team GB's group. So obviously a lot of people listening will have a bit of an interest in Team GB. And they will be in a group with Japan, Canada and Chile. We're going to hear from Alex Ibaceta later on, going to share her thoughts on Chile, who she's covered a lot, has her links there herself, and a brilliant piece as well on BBC Sport about kind of how the team's grown over the last few years, which is really, really interesting. And I'm going to kick things off with my kind of... some people may see it as a hot take, but I just think it's being realistic. I could see Team GB not winning any of their games.
Even the Chile game.
That is my hot take. I think, you know, many of our listeners will know how chaotic the last two and a bit years have been for England. And a lot of that is down to the FA. And I think the chaos has not helped at all in Team GB's preparations. And I think most fans have very realistic expectations, which is that Team GB will not get close to medaling in this tournament. But I'm going to take those even lower and say they're not going to win a game, because I think there's just been consistent mistakes along the line in terms of the preparation. And even though I think Hegarisa is a fantastic coach and her CV and her pedigree is brilliant, and I was quite excited about the appointment, I've been quite baffled with some of the choices that she's made along the way, and frustrated with some of the choices she's made along the way. My only positive is they beat New Zealand 3-0 and they lost to New Zealand in the build-up to the Women's World Cup a few years ago. So maybe that's progress. I don't know. But I am fearful it's going to be a bit of an embarrassing tournament with obviously a year to go until the Women's Euros. It's a different set. We're going to have a different coach for that tournament. But I think it could be a bit of a rude awakening.
I tend to kind of agree that they might not win a single game, or they might not get out of the group. How do you see those three games going?
The two I'm concerned about the most are the Canada and the Japan games. I think from like what I've read from Alex's pieces recently, and also just like her assessment of Chile over the last couple of years in terms of her reporting on social media, I feel like they're the team I want to back in this tournament, and they're the team that I want to do well. And I think they could surprise a lot of people. They've had some really good results in preparation as well. They drew against Germany, I think, didn't they, recently? Obviously got best goalkeeper in the world, and some pretty decent players elsewhere as well. So I'm really looking forward to watching them, and I think they're going to cause GB a lot of problems, because I think Team GB just seem like a team that's all over the place. And that's not surprising given the terrible preparations, given some slightly confusing selections. I mean, I think, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk about the Alex Greenwood issue, but Rachel Daly playing at left back in that New Zealand warm-up game, not sure about that one. I think there's just lots of problems that can be exploited. I think when England have certainly faced Japan in recent times, thinking She Believes Cup just before the pandemic, England were not good. That was a really boring, bad game. Obviously lost to Canada in one of those weird games we played recently. A very dodgy, one of them was a very dodgy goal, obviously mistake by Bardsley. But all in all, I thought England were poor. So I don't see those games going very well. And I think Canada are very unpredictable. And I think Priestman...
Good on paper.
Yeah, I think Priestman needs more time with them. I think she's on to a good thing with them. And I agree with what she said in the build-up to this tournament, which is that it's all about self-belief with them. And I totally agree. You know, when you look at their squad, they're not far from having all the right pieces to be successful. But beyond the starting 11 as well, they haven't got much. Like their starting team, you think, oh, it's quite good. But then you look to their bench, you think there's not. When Adriana Leon is who you're relying on to try and change the game, it's not brilliant. Let's hear from Alex Ibiseta, freelance football journalist and also part of the Box to Box podcast. And they're going to be doing their own preview as well. So definitely check out their work. I heard from her earlier about what she thinks about Chile's chances in the competition.
I think, obviously, Chile's journey in the Olympics is going to be rather different than that of probably the rest of the group between Canada, Team GB and Japan. Obviously, because of the very obvious drop-off in quality that we have compared to everyone else. But on the other side, you know, obviously, I won't talk about her too much, but obviously having Cristiane and Ler gives us, I think, an advantage over... I think most teams in the Olympics, in this case, we have the best goalkeeper in the world in between our goalposts. So that obviously gives the team a bit of confidence. And given that our quality is so low, I wouldn't say low, but so below those of, you know, Team GB, Canada, and Japan, having Cristiano Ronaldo in the goal allows us to be a bit more risky sometimes, because we have that security that we have the world's best keeper in our goal. But I think overall, you know, we're not expecting that much from Chile, not merely because of their quality, but their quality compared to the rest of the teams in the Olympics. But you have great players. I mean, you have Francisca Lara, Karen Araya, who have very, very good kicks and can score a rocket from outside of the box, no problem. So I think at the same time, despite us being, you know, lower and behind in a lot of the football aspects of it, we can get ahead or maybe a redemption goal in quite a few of the games. I think we can definitely surprise a lot of people if the team lives up to the occasion. I think in the World Cup, they definitely lived up to the occasion, particularly against the States. It was a pretty decent match considering that it's the US versus Chile. So if the players kind of live up and they get the confidence that I'm hoping that they're going to get from Cristiano Led, I think they can definitely surprise a lot of these teams. Maybe perhaps the teams are going to come in a bit more confident against Chile, and then hopefully we kind of just stand up to them and show them what we have. But yeah, we have a lot of players of quality. I just hope that the occasion doesn't kind of get them desperate to play really good football against some of the best in the world. I hope Chile just kind of lived to the occasion in terms of just settling their football and playing the best they can without getting too desperate, too ahead of themselves. So it should be interesting, but I do think that Chile can surprise a few of these teams.
So that was Alex there, and definitely a team that I think people should look out for, people should be excited by, and could cause a few shocks and surprises in this tournament.
Third place, two of the three third place teams are going to get through as well. So do keep that in mind that, like, let's say GB draw all three matches. I'm just throwing that out there. Like, we all agree GB might struggle, but you said GB might not win. Let's say GB draw all three, get 3 points. That might be enough to get through to the next round. So it's going to be kind of a weird tournament in that respect, especially because I think Great Britain have got maybe the kindest fixture list. You open with Chile on Wednesday. Whatever it is, I can't do all the time zones off the top of my head.
I think it's half eight.
It's 4:30 p.m. I think, in Japan.
So I think the GB gets open with Chile, which I could definitely see being 0-0 or something, and then you get that Japan game, which I think they're probably going to be the most free flowing, possessive team that GB will face, and I almost think that's the game where they could nick something, and then I reckon they'll probably draw with the Canadians, who also might be thinking, oh, we'll just take a point here and kind of get through to the next round. So I definitely think it's going to be cagey. So do you think Japan are the favourites being the host, or maybe Canada, maybe coming into this, are probably the favourites? I don't know.
I think there's a lot of teams at this tournament, and I don't want to keep repeating this throughout the podcast, but they could be great. They everything could come together, or everything could go to shit.
Yeah.
I think Japan a team like that, Canada a team like GB a team like that, I think everyone wants to see Japan do well, not just as hosts, but knowing, you know, for the last decade of history in women's football for them, and, you know, the up and downs with them, and how they haven't really ever looked the real deal under Takakura, but it would be really nice if they could put on a show at home, even though there'll be no fans. And as was reported last week, the games in Sapporo are not going to have fans either. So, you know, but maybe home field advantage, maybe home field pressure, maybe not having pressure on because there are no fans. I would like to see them go far, because I think they're just such a likeable team, such a likeable nation.
Let's move on to Group F. Theo, is this the group that you were focusing on?
No, this is Soph Lawson, a special.
So this is for fun. So I thought it would make a lot of sense if Theo took America's group and Flo took GB's group, and I sort of did the group of people being like, but that also means I have to deal with China, Brazil, Zambia, and the Netherlands, which is a lot of awkward pronunciation, so we'll kind of skip over that where possible. I think it's an interesting group. It's open to a point. I think, you know, on paper, you can say, well, China have a pretty good history in women's football, obviously, back in the 90s. But if you look at the squad they put out, and this is about the weirdest that this tournament has gotten so far before it's kicked off, is the squad Ja has chosen. I've actually got a note of it here. Of the 22 players, 5 are uncapped, 5 have less than 5 caps. Obviously, that's now we're up to 10. 6 have between 5 and 20 caps. There's 3 on 30 caps, only three centurions. It's a massively, massively inexperienced squad.
It's the anti-Team GB approach.
Yeah, it's really weird. So we're dealing with players who are really quite unknown quantities, and we don't know how they're going to come together. They played in the Asian qualifying at the start of last year before the pandemic hit. So then they had about a year off before they played their next two qualifiers against South Korea, and they just squeaked that in extra time. And those are two teams who, before that match, you'd say were on completely different parts. One on an upward trajectory, the other not so much. But everything sort of about China from 2019, we've not really seen. It's not been good, basically. Which then opens up the group even more, and you start thinking, hey, maybe Zambia can get a result, because that is a young, exciting team. And yes, they're ranked 104th in the world, but they've got a great captain, great goal scorer in Barbara Banda, who I think is probably known as well known as she can be. And then it kind of comes down to what happens with Brazil and the Netherlands, and then the path to the semis, depending on if you win the group or not, I should say. And Brazil are coming in good form. Their last match was a 0-0 against Canada, and it was dreadful. But other than that, good form, really good attackers, a little bit iffy in the defence, but they should be doing some interesting stuff. A lot of people know the Dutch players from 2017, from 2019, from the fact that they play in England, they're a bit playing Germany, they're more known to people. But I said it in 2019, I don't love the Dutch squad. I think they're very predictable. They can be very uninspired at points, but they've got good tournament experience now. So we'll have to see, but it is quite a weird and open group. I think there's a lot of unpredictability.
I feel like this group is maybe one of the only groups group F and group G definitely have, I would argue, an out and out favorite. Holland in this group and United States in group G. Outside of obviously all the Dutch players that we know, who are the kind of players to watch? And maybe for Brazil, again, the players that we don't know, who are the players to watch? In case you didn't know, listener, Soph had a brilliant piece up on The Equalizer today. Go check it out, get your subscription going. Kind of looking at players to watch for the whole tournament in general, but kind of focusing on China, Brazil, Zambia, maybe. Who should we be looking out for?
No, the little voice in my head is saying don't do the accent. But say Brazil, obviously everyone knows Marta, even though sort of her role is a little more muted these days. And you've got Dabinha in phenomenally good form.
Marta's also like been playing really well, which is not being rude, but it's kind of, we haven't seen that much of her playing well for Orlando Pride, mainly because Pride have been pretty crap for a couple of years, but they've obviously had a really good season in the NWSL, and that's certainly helped Marta as well. So I think that's really going to help Brazil, the fact that she's been playing well as well, because it didn't seem like she was, I think she's not enjoying playing in Orlando, but it hadn't been getting the best out of her. Yeah. It was tough for, I think, all the big stars there, but it finally feels like, you know, things are going really well, and I follow them all on Insta and they look like they're having the best time, and you hadn't seen that before. Before, like, you know, they weren't really happy, and I think that is really, really kind of looks good for Brazil coming into this.
I think in a weird way, and this might work for Brazil, I know I wanted to hear about Brazilians that weren't Marta, but while we're talking about her, I think what she's done well in Orlando is that the pressure's been off her a little bit and other players are stepping up. Even obviously Sydney Leroux would be the biggest storyline, who's been one of the best players in the NWSL. Morgan's picked up rare club form, obviously known for a national team form. But even players like Maggie Doughty Howard, kind of a bit of an unknown, but has been a really nice pickup for Orlando, especially at just like wanting to possess the ball, wanting to hold the ball in midfield, maybe take pressure off someone like Marta, who used to have 55 touches a game. So I think maybe you're seeing Marta better in small doses, sometimes coming off the bench and maybe being more of an impact player. And that's why you're seeing the best out of her, maybe seeing her play with a smile on her face. And I think this Brazil team could mimic that. Like you said, Dabinha, Ludmila, I assume, is also there as well. So there's a lot of talent there, and that means that Marta can be more of a role player, and I mean that you might actually get the best out of her in a way, rather than feeling like she has to score every penalty, take every set piece, you know, build every attack herself. But yeah, so who are the kind of non-martyrs to watch?
I'll say Davinia, Ludmilla, or as the voice in my head is screaming, Ludmilla.
Love it.
And it's going to sound like Jay-Z, but Jessie, is a good young attacker who plies her trade in Spain. I think Brazil, it's always going to be about the attack. So you've had like Bia is always there and thereabouts for Brazil. I quite like Jusinada, who's a fullback, who again, I know from her time in Spain more than anything else. But I think the worry, as we go back to Marta, even though we're trying to get away from her, is just how much Sunhaga might lean into Marta, because Brazil, so it has to be Marta. I think if you can kind of bounce it out and try and sort of shift her back a little bit, take the pressure off, as the sage Lloyd Hughes have suggested, you'll get a better team, and it won't just be the pressure on her, it'll be a better balance. But it's always about attack for Brazil, and we kind of really sort of pick out most of that midfield and that attack and see something good.
Something we didn't really talk about with Group E is how quickly these games are happening. We got games on Wednesday, then games on Saturday, then games on Tuesday. You know, it's three games in 6 days. It's a really rapid group stage. 22 players now for each team. And I know Serena Weidman for Holland really pushed for that. How do you feel like these teams are going to rotate? Because I think, you know, talking about a player like Marta maybe having too much on her shoulders, I feel like that's going to be a common thread with all these groups, especially after exhausting COVID seasons and lots of travel and lots of quarantine. Do we feel like rotation is going to be key, or could you see someone like Marta playing every game? Or again, going back to Holland, or even that young China squad you were kind of talking about, like, could that be an advantage, having a younger, fitter, less anxious squad maybe?
It depends the order your matches are coming in. Like, you want to be playing your weakest opposition second in the group, so you can then go from
China
your...
have Zambia match number two, just so you know. I'm really pushing this China.
The weakest opposition, not the team that are actually going to go on and surprise everyone and get gold. If only there was a copper medal for them. Anyone who doesn't get that, their nickname is the Copper Queens. I think if you go back 5 years to when life was normal and Sweden were doing ridiculous things with a not young squad, you know, like Lotte Pellin and Caroline Seger, Nila Fischer.
And playing 120 minutes every match.
Like 120 minutes, not rotating, scorching heat in Brazil. These are players you think would be tired. You talk to them afterwards and they're like, actually, it's the fittest I've ever felt. You know, we're doing training every day. I can run for it's crazy. So I think it kind of goes back to the individual teams more than the individual players and how comfortable they are. And, you know, if the coach has enough faith in the backup players to start them or when to bring them on and stuff. And that's down on the coaches. And we've got some young coaches who maybe won't make the same decisions in the same situation a few years down the line. But yeah, it's a brutal tournament. It's known for being brutal. I think that's one of the reasons teams like the US are always favorited, because they are known for their athleticism and their ability to handle stuff like this. But teams have been trying to give themselves extra pressure in the build-up. They're playing in hot environments and different ways you can tweak your trainings to exhaust yourselves and put yourself in that environment, as long as it doesn't knock you out before the tournament. We'll have to see. And I think any time, if I was to make any proclamations, no matter what they are, I feel like I'd just get them all wrong. So
Zambia going through for Flo, any wild predictions on Group F?
I think we kind of mentioned in the previous group, but because on paper, you would say, yeah, Netherlands to win the group. But I also just think anything can happen in this tournament. And I think Brazil have a good chance to win that group as well. And I think although Holland, probably just second to the USA, have had the kind of the most solid and professional preparation as things go, because they've got so many players playing in Europe, they can bring them together more easily over the past 18 months than any other nation, really. So their preparation has been solid. I think, yeah, they have been frustrating and a little bit stale. It probably doesn't help as well that Wigman's on the way out. So it's probably hard to kind of motivate your team when that's the case, when she's already got her eyes on the next job. So, yeah, I think Brazil could surprise a few people, and so many likeable characters in that Brazil team. So I'd love to see them go far.
My not very bold predictions, I do think China will be in the last eight quarterfinals, just because I think they're going to be hard to beat. And like you were kind of alluding to, so if they've got the nice fixture list, Brazil first, could see that being a draw. Zambia second, you get that win, you're through to the next round. And then maybe you get a rotated Holland squad in game three. And I don't know. I kind of feel like China are definitely going to be in the quarterfinals. It's interesting you talk about how young their squad is, because I remember them from 2019 being really hard to beat and pretty experienced. So it's definitely an interesting kind of, not maybe what I was expecting with China, but I still...
It's a weird squad.
I retain the confidence. Before we, I start opening up some very strange poems about Group G, I did apply an Olivia Rodrigo song to every team that sums up. So I'll do Group E and F before I get to my group. So for Team Great Britain, I had obviously One Step Forward, Two Steps Back.
100%. Painfully real, man. Painfully real.
I don't know how familiar you two are with Olivia Rodrigo, but I know all our listeners are stans. We stan you, Olivia. Thank you for getting the vaccine message out there. Thank you for bringing the hits this summer. For Chile, I had... So this is actually a bit of a deep dive. This song is actually from the High School Musical TV show, but still sung by Olivia Rodrigo. I had Started Something New. Big High School Musical fan. I know you are, Flo. So yeah, Chile, Started Something New. Japan, Driver's License. It's the hit we all know. It's a bit of a ballad. It's kind of emotional. It's about going back through your hometown. You know, it's about kind of growing up, but also letting go at the same time. So I felt like that one was kind of Japan. Canada was Happier. This one's maybe kind of hard to do, but it's about moving on. It's about finding someone new and then, you know, making like being okay with you being happier. So maybe this is more me projecting Bev Priestman on the Canadian side. But yeah, I kind of felt like it was a good moving on song for Canada. They also got a medal in the last Olympics. So I think
the one before.
They are kind of figuring out how they come to terms with this tournament, because are they favorites? Are they not? Like I said, I think they've got a very open group. Moving on to Group F, Brazil, this one was pretty easy for me. It was Good For You, the real pop punk hit. And then Holland, I had Traitor, classic breakup song because of the Serena Weigman effect. Zambia had to be, it's brutal out here. The first track on the album, Sour, if you know it, yeah, it's kind of a lament to everything that people think you're going to enjoy in life, and it turns out being pretty salty. So good luck to you, Zambia. I hope Soph's predictions come true, but I definitely think it's going to be brutal out there. China, I had Wondering, also from the High School Musical soundtrack. This one, you know, just kind of like, it was more of like a who is this team kind of aspect. Lyrics like, if you know, if I could go back and change the past, be a little bit braver against the odds, would I still be lost? Because I'd be left wondering. So there you have it. Those are my Olivia Rodrigo tips for groups E and F. And now I'll bring you to Group G. So yeah, Group G is a great group. Maybe the spiciest group.
It's the group of death. It's a great group.
It's a great group. I mean, I would argue New Zealand already half dead. So if you count that as the group of death, then
R.I.P.
Yes. But what's great about it is it's two traditional kind of tournament rivals, Sweden and the USA, and two local rivals, Australia and New Zealand. Obviously, because it's in Tokyo, you can have a great time zone for this. And apparently COVID's over in Australia and New Zealand. So I kind of think this might be a great tournament for, especially with the World Cup in a couple of years. I think
Australia game... actually just went into another lockdown in a lot of their states. So yeah, I think
New Zealand are good.
Okay. New Zealand are good.
RIP.
Australia,
not so much.
Not so. Yeah.
My point is, 21st of July, Aussies and Kiwis, get at it. I think it's going to be a great game of football, and I think you should be watching if you're out there on your bloody time zone. So yeah, Sweden, USA, Australia. Starting with Sweden, kind of an interesting team. I think they are probably... way out as the second best team in this group, but they are also probably the dark horses for maybe the whole tournament, I would say. Definitely got to be targeting a semi-final, at least final four, bronze medal, maybe even silver, maybe even gold, I think is probably Sweden's MO. They obviously knocked out the US in the last Olympics, which I think is huge for the mental aspect of this. I think it's good that, you know, they're opening the whole tournament against the US, and I think that's going to be a big game. I think, you know, the US have a lot of players coming back as well. I think you're only probably missing, off the top of my head, Hope Solo, probably Klingenberg, and I don't know, maybe Morgan Brian from that team are probably not there. But otherwise, the US are bringing back a lot of familiar faces who will have a lot of beef to settle in this Sweden game, especially people like Christian Press, who missed a penalty in that shootout. Never forget. And so they got the bronze medal at the World Cup 19, I believe, beating England in the third and fourth playoff.
Yes, they did.
So yeah, this is a team that know how to get far in tournaments, know how to win. And I think they've got a lot of young players like Hannah Glass, Hannah Bennison, the two Hannahs. Look out for the Hannahs.
Hannah Glass is about 28, I think.
Still young and exciting in my mind.
The Danielle Carter effect again.
She's got the Danielle Carter effect. She's new. But she's young to me. But yes, exciting players to watch. The two Hannahs. One is 28. One is like 18. Everyone knows that. So yeah, I think this Swedish team is they're kind of known, I think, for being well organized, but I actually think they've got a little bit more flair than people give them credit for, especially in the fullback positions like John Anderson, who everyone knows from Chelsea.
And they got a good result against like USA recently. Like,
yeah,
they
1-1.
Played really well.
Yeah, that was in April. Hertig with a great header off a set piece. I think we'll all be watching set pieces very closely in this first game. I think it's good. I think the results haven't been great since that result. They got a 0-0 with Australia, which we'll get to Australia in a second, but that's about as bad a result you can get in 2021 is drawing with or not scoring against Australia. So I do think there's something to watch out for there. The Olivia Rodrigo song I applied to Sweden was Enough For You. Lyrics like, and you always say I'm never satisfied, but I don't think that's true because all I've ever wanted was to be enough for you. So yeah, Sweden, kind of famous bridesmaids, but like, could this be the year they're at the altar? Next up, New Zealand. Now, I kind of joked about it earlier, but I would argue New Zealand are going to be competing for being the worst team at the Olympics. And maybe that sounds harsh, but they have a bit of a Team GB problem. I haven't played any games. The squad doesn't know each other. So what can we really expect? They did play a friendly, like GB did, probably the only one they've had the other week. And it was 3-0 loss. So what does that tell you? But they also, I think way, way back in early 2020, they did lose to Canada. They went to the Algarve Cup. They lost to Norway, Belgium, Italy. Or actually, I think maybe they drew with the Belgium. But either way, this is a team that haven't really had a good result in, you know, before COVID. And I think you talk about that pre-warm-up for the 2019 World Cup. That just seems like a very, very long time away. I think best case for them, they get a massive derby win against Australia and they finish third place and they get out of the quarterfinals. But otherwise, I think this team is almost a shoe-in for bottom of
Well, they
of
also
group
just
G.
don't have any goals in them. I think that's a huge
yes.
problem.
Yes, so
you, like, look at that team, you're like, who is going to score goals?
Yeah, so Hannah Wilkinson was the last player to score for them at the Algarve Cup in 2020, and she is an illustrious member of Unattached FC. So if the fact that she's unattached makes her a better player, akin to Press and Heath, maybe Hannah Wilkinson is going to be a standout player. The other player that kind of, you know, apart from the Abby Ersigs and Ali Riley's and Rhea Percival's, Olivia Chance used to play for Everton, plays for Brisbane Roar. I think she is probably their top scorer coming into this. You know, I think she had 3 goals last season. So that kind of puts a little bit in perspective for how poor this New Zealand side is. And I think if they get any goals against these teams, it'll be kind of a good result. Olivia Rodrigo's song here is I Hope You're Okay. I don't know if I'll see you again someday, but if you're out there, I hope you're okay. Next up, Noisy Neighbours, Australia. So this, I would argue, even though New Zealand haven't played as many matches, Australia are almost coming into the tournament with worse form because they've played matches and they've been absolutely battered. So listen to this, Flo. So 5 games in 2021. They lost 5-2 to Germany, 5-0 to Holland, 3-2 to the Danes. They got 0-0 with Sweden, which, like I said, not bad. And then 1-0 to Japan. They've been flipping and flapping between a back four and a back five. It looks like maybe they're going to settle on the back five coming into this tournament because, you know, the 0-0 with Sweden and the 1-0 with Japan maybe shows a little bit of promise. But this is a slightly suspicious team. Players like Claire Polkinghorn, ex-Houston Dash, famous for being in one of the worst Houston Dash defences of all time. She's in this squad. Ellie Carpenter, we all know, could play in that back three, is a fantastic football player, but this team will leak goals. And I, you know, it's amazing they have Sam Kerr and Caitlin Ford up front, but really I think these games could end up being 5-2 against the USA.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't worked out a way to get the best out of Sam Kerr in this new tenure, and it hasn't bode well, because I mean it's quite easy to kind of get rid of that threat, and all the teams that have faced Australia have just done it really well, is just kind of mark her out the game, make sure she doesn't get much of the ball, and if she does get the ball, just smother her. And I know they're trying to come up with some alternatives to get more support around Kerr, and a bit like we were talking about Marta, like take the pressure off a little bit, but obviously she is so key to their success and is coming off the back of a really good season, so you'd like to think this is a really good opportunity. But as much as I think WSL fans would like to see Australia do well, given how many are playing there, and also the Arsenal connection, I mean, they've got loads of Aussies in the team, I just think realistically they're a bit chaotic at the moment, a bit like Team GB, just a bit all over the place. Haven't quite got enough good players in the right positions to be successful at the moment. And I think relying too much on individuals.
Too many good players in certain positions.
It's almost like the
imbalance. Sophie, are we overreacting about Australia?
Or? I mean, I would say that I disagree quite a lot, actually.
Here we go.
I've caught some of the games this year. Like, there was a lot of good stuff they did against Japan the other morning. The Denmark game, the Sweden are a fantastic team who have been dreadful at taking their chances this calendar year. Like, their shots to goals ratio is horrific. But sort of against, like, Denmark and stuff, the way that Australia are conceding is really pitiful. Same with Germany, like, they were fine, and then Germany went, and then Australia just folded for, you know, like a 10-minute period. I really like what Tony G has actually kind of been doing with the squad, trying to, you know, he came in and they hadn't played a game for a year, and this was a new squad to him, and he said, right, I'm not going to take any players who play in Australia. I'm going to just do European players because we're touring Europe and that's a lot easier. And he's tried to work it out as he's gone along, which is why you've seen the shift to the back five, is to try and stop that, plug that leak. And it's worked, but he's putting Steph Catley and Ellie Carpenter back there. And you can put Catley back there, I guess, because of her injuries as well. But Ellie Carpenter is one of their best attacking threats. And the second she's back in the five, you don't have her creating, you don't have her causing all sorts of problems. So what I think Gustafsson's going to do is we're going to see a back three against New Zealand. They're going to just try and absolutely destroy the Kiwis. And then they go to a five against Sweden and against the US. Try and keep a clean sheet. If not, try and limit the damage, because obviously goal difference could come into it with being a third place finisher, and try and get through that way. But I think the main issue for Australia isn't the Tokyo Olympics. It's the World Cup in 2 years. And it's all about building towards that. And this is...
Yeah, totally agree on that.
And this is the only chance they'll have to play competitive fixtures before then. So it's a learning process. But there are a lot of good things going on there. You just have to kind of ignore the obvious mistakes. And the mistakes are... And it's not just that they're right there, but they're quite easy to fix as well. And if you look at when they're scoring as well, there's kind of a never say die attitude he's put into this squad. So even if Denmark are 3-0 up, or Australia are absolutely done against the US, they dig out these goals right at the end of the match, because they just keep going and they just believe that they'll score. So I think we're seeing the start of something potentially good.
Start of something new. The song I had, the Olivia Rodrigo song I did have for Australia, was Jealousy, Jealousy. Come Paris Sun, killing me slowly, thinking back to World Cup 2019 and that underperformance. Final team in this group, they do not need no introduction. Olivia Rodrigo song, of course, Deja Vu. It is the United States of this place over here. 44 matches unbeaten. They did draw with Sweden 1-1, but otherwise they've been blowing teams out of the water. They want gold. They want to become the first world champion, Olympic champion, double act. They've obviously been foiled the last couple of times, or the last time. They've either lost a World Cup or they've lost the Olympics. They got done in 2015, then won. They won 2014. Sorry, they won 2012, got done in 2015, then got done in 2016, then won 19. So now they can do 2020 or 2021, whatever you want to call it. So I do think they are fired up. They've brought back a lot of veterans, much to the chagrin of many people, although the wonderful Lynn Williams, all-time top goal scorer and assist maker in the NWSL, is finally in Tokyo. So let's hope we see a little bit of her. And of course, the brilliant Chrissy Mewis and Sam Mewis, siblings USA. The only weakness I'd say here is, are they too reliant on Kristen Press, a player who is currently training by herself, who continues to be the standout in a team with supposedly so many other brilliant players? And Kelly O'Hara, maybe probably going to be starting at right back in the 4-3-3, I think is a real weak spot. And, you know, you talk about Sweden, if they can get those fullbacks up, maybe we could see Kelly O'Hara making errors or leaving space and doing some damage. So yeah, USA obviously favorites, don't need to say too much there, but I don't think this team is perfect. I think they're obviously not over the hill. They're still the best team in the world by a long way, but yeah, it feels like maybe this is a good chance in a small tournament to try and do something crazy.
Yeah, I think they need to take a chill pill. I think, you know, the USA are arrogant when it comes to women's football, and in other ways too, but especially when it comes to women's football. So it's not surprising to, you know, to see them like this in the build-up, to basically have the gold medal already sitting on their necks, really, at this rate. It's been that kind of commentary. But I really think, like you said, in this sort of tight 12-team tournament that some people are claiming is too easy, like, there's a lot of good teams in this tournament. There are a lot of good teams. I think it's one of the best formats because it's actually the best teams in the world. Like, when you look at it, it's the best teams in the world. And I think taking the semi-finalists from the World Cup makes sense to me. I think having other regions do qualifying makes sense to me. So I'm really excited for a tight little 12-team format because I think it's actually fairer when it comes to competition like this. And I think USA need to chill out because I don't think it's going to be as easy as they think. And although I don't expect Australia to be good, I think Soph has a point in terms of not thinking that they're going to be as much of a walkover as they might look on paper. And also with a coach that's has worked within the US national team setup for, what, 10 years or something like that? You know, he will know how to push their buttons and how to beat them. So I think having been in the tough group as well, obviously they're going to get out of that group and they'll probably win the group, but it'll be a tough group to get out of. And I think they'll be really pushed to their limits, not by Team GB, but by other teams in this tournament. They're going to be pushed to their limits. And if it goes to extra time, if it goes to penalties, I can definitely see USA losing. And I think it would be hilarious given the arrogance in the build-up.
Overall predictions, gold, silver and bronze, and then one surprise for the tournament from both of you, please.
I'm gonna go Sweden for gold just because I really want to see the US fail. I haven't actually looked at how the groups would map out as well in terms of like teams facing each other as well, so
I've got it in front of me, so I'll try and guide.
Okay,
because let me know what you US think. Have a very kind draw.
Okay, so I'm kind of going in blind.
Zambia, China.
How I would like to see it play out would be a Sweden USA final, and
that can happen because they're in the same group.
So I'm going to go Sweden gold, USA silver, and Holland bronze.
I would. Going with my heart, a Sweden-Japan final. I don't care who gets gold there.
That would be lovely. That'd be a great final.
And then going with my heart, again, just kind of being mean here, Brazil to beat the US in the bronze medal.
Yes, that would be so good. Marta getting, that'd be so good. That'd be so good.
I don't think it's going to happen, but hey, we can dream.
I think Japan have bronze medal written all over them. I think they've got gutsy semi-final knockout written all over them.
We'll be against the US, so
yeah, exactly. In theory, I think I think mine, maybe this sounds a bit cautious, but I think it would be USA gold, Sweden silver, Japan bronze, and the big surprise would be Chile maybe also getting to the semifinals. Maybe you get the Chile Sweden semifinal and USA Japan semifinal.
We've been talking for a while in like 110 degree heat, for Soph and I.
Wow, coming out of the Fahrenheit.
Whatever, it's hot. It's hot as hell in London. So I'm going to wrap things up unless anyone wants to add one last hot take. Literally hot take.
So come in with a hot take. No fans allowed.
I think Manu Ibuchi is going to be the player of the tournament. And Japan are going to win.
Yes. Love it. Japan. I'm Team Japan. So thanks so much for joining us. Go follow us at Relatively Foot on Twitter and send us your thoughts, your predictions, your issues with the Zambian lineup on Twitter or on at Instagram at Relatively Football. Follow Soph at Lawson_SV.
That's correct.
That's right. Obviously, we're all followers already, but go follow that. You can find Flo doing all sorts of good stuff for the BBC, BBC London, the fun people at The Athletic, Offside Rule. Where there's football, you'll find Flo. And yeah, get some sleep, turn on the fans, and get ready for some lovely early morning Olympics. It's lucky to have it, and maybe we'll save the philosophical debate about should it be there for another time.
And just one more plug as well. If you want to come down to South East London, Huns FC and Studs are hosting a free screening of the Japan game, Team GB Japan, on Saturday, 24th of July. Kickoff is 11:30, so it's not like super antisocial timings. Come down from 10:30. There's going to be food and drink and coffee and whatever there, not for free. Sorry, you have to spend money on it. And we're also hopefully going to be getting a WSL player, TBC, to come down as well and doing a little Q&A. So yeah, tickets are free. Go on Huns FC or Studs Instagram/Twitter to grab a ticket. We'd love to see you there.
Love it. Wish I could be there.
Well, yeah, and a good and hopefully exciting Olympic tournament awaits. And we will see you on the other side. We're doing a few pods during the tournament, hopefully bring some more fun special guests in. Thanks to Alexi Bassetta for her little Chile preview as well that we dropped in. Stay cool out there, kids.